Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Feel free to take your chairs and crank them around if you want a better view. That's no problem on that. Looking forward to this day for the last week and a half. Just giving you a report about my trip to Chad and the missions trip. And I expressed this last week, but I just want to say again how thankful I am for you as a church that you see this as important. I'll talk about this at the end, God willing, if I have enough time, but the trip is really not about an adventure. Like, that's not the point of it. I did have a few opportunities to do some things culturally. It's really about ministry. So we'll talk about some of the cultural things, and then I'll talk about the ministry stuff that's happening in Chad, and really God is doing a great thing there. So your partnership is actually affecting local churches all over the country of Chad. So very, very important, and I appreciate your faithfulness. You're willing to sacrifice not only financially, but seeing me go away for, you know, the better part of 3.5 weeks by the time it's, you know, getting ready to go, coming back. And so that is not lost on me how important that is. So you really are important partners in this ministry. So a little bit about Chad, and left October 1st with these people. They were kind enough to drop me off at the airport on a Tuesday, and flew from there to Paris, about an 8.5 hour flight to give you a couple of meals on the plane. They're not half bad. And when you're going to a place like Chad, you definitely eat everything on the plane because you just don't know what's going to happen when you land. That's the best picture I could get out of my airplane seat window flying into the outskirts of Paris on the way in on that day. We flew from Paris to the capital city of Djamena, which you see right here. Chad is a huge country. It is one of the largest, if not the largest, countries in terms of landmass in Africa. You'll see that the top of this, you know, on a map, this is all like, this is the Sahara Desert. That's where that is. You know, Egypt is up here and that. But the bottom of it gets right into the heart of Africa, and it's the jungle. So it's many contrasts in terms of this country and what it's like. We flew into Djamena. We got there on a Wednesday. Thursday, we had kind of a down day, which was nice. This is a view of the room. We stayed at the Team Mission House, which I'll talk about in a moment. And those are mosquito nets that I didn't in this place feel I needed to use them. The room was pretty well sealed, but malaria, we were in the rainy season, and malaria is a very real threat there. So if you saw a mosquito flying around, everybody just make sure that they work really hard to kill it. So like the locals, everybody, that's just what you do. So it's a concern. The team is, they're a mission agency of sorts. They partner with people with the intention of establishing churches. They own a compound in Djamena, and they allow other missionaries and mission groups to stay there relatively cheap. So I think we stayed there 2 nights. We flew in late Wednesday night and then stayed there Thursday night. And on the way back, we stayed there 2 nights. And I think the total cost was probably around $65 for that, and gives you a place with air conditioning, which is really nice because the rest of the time you don't have that. And, you know, nothing to write home about in terms of its comfort level, but a good place and safe. And so we appreciated very much their ministry to us. No idea why we have hot air balloons. We'll keep going. Thursday, that's the generic slide that I apparently didn't delete. Thursday, we did a few things in the city. Up here is Pastor Christian, and he was with Lauren, that was driving us. So this was our taxi for the time that we were in Djamena. It's a Toyota Corolla that should have been taken off the road a long, long time ago, but it works. During that day, it was kind of both a restful day and also getting a few things done. When you're first time in the country, you clear customs, but you still have to register your passport with the local police station. It is a horrible feeling to hand over your passport in the middle of Africa to someone and says, who says, "I'll give it back to you in about 2 hours." And he drives off in a vehicle. And you give him $20 and say, "Go do that for me." But Laurent is great. He's a trustworthy individual. Also, we did things like exchange money. Chad has its own currency. They do not accept U.S. dollars as official legal tender. The only time you could avoid that is if in the capital city there were a few places that would accept a credit card. So you could use that, and you know they do the exchange all for you. But everywhere else, we had to use Chadian currency. And if you look afterwards, I got a few examples of Chadian currency over on the table over there. Some of you have already looked, and you'll see like a $5,000 bill, and a number of you are already asked. The exchange rate that we got was 610-1. So a $5,000 bill is worth about $8. So that's give you a perspective on there. So, and that's due to a whole bunch of factors, including hyperinflation in their past. That Thursday, we actually went to a nice sit-down restaurant, or at least nice by Jimena standards. And some of you saw my email and where I said that I ate camel, and this is it. So Pastor Christian, which I'll show a picture of him a little bit later, we walked into this place. He and Scott Williquit and I, we sat down, and I said, "Christian, what should I eat?" And he said, "Oh, I'm eating this." I said, "How often do you come here?" "Not very often. It's way too expensive for him." So I said, "Why are you going to?" "It's really, really good." I said, "Well, I'll have what he's having." And then after they order it, I said, "Well, now what is this?" And he's like, "It's chamel, chamel." I said, "What?" Because they speak French. And I said, "I have no idea what that is." He's like, "English, camel. Okay." absolutely delicious. This tastes just like beef stroganoff. It's thinly shaved. If I hadn't told you that would camel, you would have never known. And it was really, really tasty. So all in all, not bad. But that was a first for me. The next morning, I'll go back to that slide, hopefully. Let me go back. The next morning, we left our team mission house at about 3:15 in the morning to get to this is your bus stop at 4 a.m. And our bus doesn't leave till a little after 5, but you want to get there because you need to get tickets. It's a first-come, first-served basis. And you get the earlier you get there, you're guaranteed seats on the bus. If you don't have seats, the middle floor will be lined with people that they get a discount for that, but rather uncomfortable when you're going to go for nearly a 15-hour journey and through boom, 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 boom the whole way. So you want to get there early, and so we did, made for a very, very long day. Like I said, we left the house about 3:15. By the time we got settled into the house that we went to, I don't know, I guess it was probably 10:30 at night, something like that. And so you really feel the effect of it. But it was all in all a good experience. This is Pastor Christian. He is one of our co-teachers that we were working with. He's a young man, 29 years old, has a wife, 2 children, met her and her children. Just a wonderful, godly man, growing like crazy. He has gone to Cameroon to get some additional theological studies, and we're working with him to help him be the future trainer of the PEP material himself. This is at a stop. There's our bus in the background. Inside, this is to give you an idea of what that looks like. We actually got a very nice, this is actually compared, if you looked at the other buses, this was a really, really nice bus. And actually Scott was angry about that because, Scott Williquit, because he said, you know, "I went with you to Turkey and we lived in luxury, you come to Chad and we have the same thing." And I said, "My people prayed, brother, you know." And in all seriousness, the Lord did answer prayer. We were grateful for that. And it had air conditioning that worked on the bus, which is really nice. Because most of your journey, you feel like you've ever flown an airplane and you have heavy turbulence. That's what it feels like for most of that journey. It's just so having... I'll say also, too, the idea of deodorant or things like that is non-existent there. And so you just get used to everywhere you go having thick body odor. Like it's just a thing. And after a while, honestly, you don't even notice it anymore. It's just part of life. So so air conditioning, though, definitely in an enclosed space like this does help for things like that. These are kind of blurry, but these are some pictures just snapping like the Chadian countryside along the way. Most of the country is very, very poor. They live in brick mud huts. Even in the cities, most people live in essentially tin shacks. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. Currently ranks like, top 10 poorest. We stopped in one city, and this is a view of outside of my window, and I think this was Amandu or Mandu, something like that. You could get out if you wanted to, and I did for just a little bit. They offer a bathroom there, but bathroom there means squat toilet and no sanitation whatsoever. So you just basically decide ahead of time you're not going to eat much the night before or drink much, and you just make it on your way. This is actually a pit stop. They let the engine cool down a little bit, and the women all go one way into the field, and the men go the other way to use the restroom. We were near a village. These boys would not let me take a picture of them. It's probably the first time in their lives they'd ever seen a white man. They came out and just stared the entire time. But every time I'd raise my camera, they ran away. And I found out why is that among the more tribal people, they think that when you take a picture, you are actually affecting or even stealing the soul of someone. And so, but they didn't seem to be too worried. They'd run off laughing and then come back as soon as I put my camera down. That was just an interesting experience along the way. We made our way from Jemena on that bus ride down to Sar, and it's not a direct line. You actually follow like down here and then back up that way, and that's what makes it 15 hours, just short of 15 hours total time spent on that trip. When we arrived, we met Les and Carol Carew. Carol actually grew up on the mission field in Central African Republic and also Chad, their bordering countries. She knew as a girl, some of you remember Dr. Larry Fogel, who was here. They lived very close by. She was a missionary kid, went back to the United States, was not really in a good spiritual condition when she went back. She met Les. Les was not spiritually good either. They eventually, in their 30s, started attending a faithful gospel preaching Baptist church, and God got a hold of both of their hearts. And after their kids were raised and out of the house, they dedicated themselves to go back to Chad. Originally Central African Republic, they got forced out of there because of military coups and threats, and now have been in Chad. Carol was wonderful. Because she'd grown up in Chad, she speaks very good French. French is the official language. They actually have two official languages there, Arabic and French. In the northern half of the country, Arabic is more commonly spoken. The southern half, French. But then there are a number of tribal dialects that are, hundreds of thousands of people that is their primary language. Sango and Sara being the most common in where we were at. And she knew those languages as well, and so she would be helpful if we were out and about that she could translate. Les knows a little bit of French, is able to converse some that way, but just a faithful couple. They are approaching 70 years old, and by the end of 2025, they'll be coming back off of the field. They're doing amazing ministry, and we got to stay in this home. Beautiful complex. That's actually a banana tree out there that isn't yet producing a lot of bananas, but will probably by the time that they're gone and off the field. This complex is actually owned by Bibles International. You may remember some of the people we've had from them. And when Les and Carol move off of the field, they're going to take this over and convert it into a translation center. They're currently working on the Sara translation of the Bible. There's actually one who's arriving today from Michigan who's helping edit that. And so they come to right now staying with Les and Carol, but eventually this will be a place where they can bring people in to work on translations, not only for here in Chad, but also some neighboring countries where there's a lot of translation work that still needs to be done. It's their helper, Alice, coming in for the day, and she was a real gem, a joyful Christian woman to connect with. Saturday took us out just a little bit into pick up supplies. This would be pretty close to one of their main streets that you would go to. There's trash everywhere, like everywhere you go. This was probably the nicest single store in the city of Sar. I would compare it to a stripped-down version of Dollar General. They had just about everything you needed there except for any sort of fresh foods. When I say just about, it's limited supply, but you could get your basics and your essentials there. And so Les and Carol would go there, and they go there quite frequently because you actually never know for sure what they're going to have. So you go in there regularly. If they get something in, you go, we need that, and it could be 2 months before we get it again. So it took us in there, and we did some supply runs while we were there. Les and Carol are just doing amazing work, predominantly with Muslims. Over 50% of the population of Chad is Islamic, and it's to the point where basically unless you're a Muslim, you're not going to be able to run and achieve national office there. Christians are essentially shut out, as well as tribal and pagan religions are shut out. They are doing a lot of work with the Muslims. Most they have an English club that she has started, and so here they're gathering around and teaching English. I got to spend some time with them, for them to talk to me, learn some English, and even speak a little bit of the gospel to them. They're pretty open there to conversations, but there is some moderate persecution that happens. I'll show you a little bit later here a picture of the market, the main market, and basically unless you're a Muslim, you're not allowed to have a storefront, own property in it. And so Christians struggle with this greatly. A lot of the gospel work is being done among people in Chad and Central African Republic who are from tribal religions, having a harder time penetrating the Islamic world. But Les and Carol are working to that end, and have seen a number of young people come to Christ. Some have had to flee their homes because of persecution from their families. So this is just a real treat and a blessing to be with them. When we got there, outside their home, this tree needed to come down, and the way they do this is you actually guys go up in the tree with machetes or with like axes and stuff, and hatchets, there's the word I'm looking for, and they log it off piece by piece. Crazy. Some of them did actually have tie down, but you would hear them working all day. There they are, they've got more of it down. This was a project. Along the way, one of the logs went the wrong way and smashed up their guard shed, so that will have to be rebuilt. They did have a chainsaw, and so when it was on the ground, they would cut up some of the bigger logs, but everything else was done by hand. It's just too expensive for them for fuel and maintenance and supplies for that kind of equipment. So that was, this is outside of their house, their compound. This will all sit there. There will be people eventually that will pick up some of it for starting fires, for cooking, and all kinds of things like that. This is right outside their compound area. This is what you see everywhere. Huge potholes, trash in the streets. Just down the street from where they're at, there is a mosque, so the call to prayer would go up 5 times a day. You would hear that. It wasn't terribly loud, thankfully, but definitely you realize that there is spiritual battles that are going on in this place. This is a little game actually some of our teenagers played on Wednesday night. This is called Jump In and Jump Out, and they invited me to become a part of it. And you have to follow jump the in. Instructions.
Jump out. Jump in. Jump out.
Jump,
jump
out.
Jump out. Okay,
now when we say jump right, you jump right. This way, huh? Jump right. Jump left, you jump left. Okay? Right, left. Are you listening?
Yeah.
Okay, right, left. Okay, here we go.
Jump right.
Goodbye. She's out. Okay, so yeah, that's the idea of that game. But it's a good way, actually, to teach, like, English recognition. She does a variety of games to teach them how to respond to commands and listen attentively. And it was a good time to meet some of them. Not really what we went there for, but had several nights where just got a chance to interact with them and had me pray both nights and pray the gospel as I did so. That Sunday, I was able to preach in the Francophone Baptist Church. This is actually the first Baptist Mid-Missions church plant in the city, in the country of Chad. It's got a unique design, and you'll see there's three wings to it. You've got this one in the front, and then to the right there's another wing, and then to the left there is still another wing. This is during the offering. People, they bring their offerings up front and deposit during the service. They have a time where people just come up and give the offering. The reason they originally built the building this way is because they were preaching in French, and so the people in the middle would listen to French, and then to the left it would be in Sango translated, and to the right, Sara. And so today, though, they've established other native-speaking churches in the area. But now it's all French-speaking people who come here. I would bet probably on when the service was really going, there's 550, 600 people that were there. It's a large church and just doing amazing work. They feed you afterwards. This is chicken with rice and something like a potato. Very good. I really had to be very careful, though, in eating their food. It is not actually because it wasn't clean. I really was not worried about that. Their chicken, their meat, everything they cooked was very well cooked. The issue is that they use an incredible amount of palm oil and peanut oil. And we discovered that that is something that when you're not used to that, and I experienced the same thing in Liberia, runs right through you. And it makes for a miserable experience. And so I could eat a little bit, but not a lot. Food on the whole was very good, flavor, delicious. There's a few times that you wondered what you're eating along the way. Monday morning, we started out teaching, and this was what we did Monday through Friday for the first week, and then Monday through Friday for the second week. I'm not going to show you a ton of pictures from each day because they all look the same, essentially. Scott and myself were teaching along with two Chadian co-teachers that we were working with. Just had a great time with them. Gideon, you see up there, I'll show a picture of him later. He was our translator. He's a man who is 50 years old and has recently dedicated himself towards gospel ministry. He's receiving theological training and will be a pastor soon. Actually, his story is wonderful. He wanted to be a pastor for nearly 15 years, but his wife was not willing to do that. And so he said, then that isn't what God has called me to. And one day, he never pestered her about it, just prayed and had some other trusted friends pray. And one day she came to him and said, Gideon, I think I've been wrong and you should do this. He was a very successful businessman and gave that up, cut his salary probably from 100% down to 10%, kind of a cut in salary in order to do this. And is just a good brother. So he was a real blessing, speaks good French and pretty good English. Here was our class, a few ladies, mostly men, about 65, 70 of them total. It was down a little bit than what they were hoping for, mostly because Chad has experienced in this rainy season historic floods. I saw places where you had mud huts that were sitting in water. Just so it was highly unusual for them. So there were a number of pastors who just physically could not get there for the training. Teaching throughout the week, as I mentioned, I taught Genesis throughout 2 weeks through a translator, and that was a wonderful experience. And there you get an idea. Day by day in the morning, it wasn't too bad. Probably in that room, it'd be 80, 85 degrees. By the time you get in the afternoon, it's 95 to 105 degrees. And they've got open windows on the side. What you really hope for is that there was a breeze. And if not, even the Chadians, when it get plus 100, they were having struggles. So you do all kinds of stuff just like you do in America. As if you're a teacher, to get people to perk up, you know, silly stuff, fun stuff. All right, everybody stand up, take a 3-minute break here, you know, massage your neighbor's shoulders, whatever you got to do to keep it going. But it's long for everybody. So we'd start at about 8 in the morning and finish up about 4:30 in the afternoon with about an hour and a half lunch break in there. And so that was the daily schedule. And then actually the men would gather, the pastors would gather an hour ahead of time for just times of prayer. We did not usually attend that because it was all done in French and it really wasn't helpful for us, but they were faithful brothers there. This is outside the church. They have quite the compound that they've established. They have a large Christian school and educating not only Christians but also Muslims who are willing to come, and so it's a gospel opportunity. I can't remember if I have this later in here. You see this building here. This is thatched roof and stuff. They actually set this up after the rainy season, basically education there is dependent on the season. Rainy season, that's that's growing time, and also transportation is difficult. When it's not rainy season, that's when school's in session. And so they actually put this building up while I was there as a temporary classroom during not rainy season. And it was interesting to watch them do that. These are some of the men's transportation to come, and you'd see these parked all over the compound, including in the back of the church, that they'd park them there for the 2 weeks that they were there, and it was just kind of a normal occurrence. There is your restroom if you need to use it throughout the day, so, and I avoided that, so. We'd have a little break for coffee, and they'd serve you breads, delicious breads. They're colonized by the French, so they're French. They have delicious French-style breads. Very, very good, but other foods are interesting. I cannot remember the name of this. This is kind of like a porridge-like subject, and this picture does not do it justice. This cup was massive. It's like that big and that big around. And it's kind of got chunks of stuff in it with some lime flavor and a little bit of sugar. I didn't particularly like it. I could only put half of it down, and I used the excuse, and it was partially true, that, hey, I'm going to be teaching here just after this. This is just too much for me. So that one was one I didn't really love much at all. During lunch break, the men would line up for food. Ladies would serve them. These ladies dedicated 2 weeks of their time to come serve. This would be often a very typical meal. This is called boule. It's a French word for ball. It's usually made of cassava or millet. Not much nutritional value to it. Then they'd have some sort of meat. And then this particular sauce is called long sauce. And they call it long sauce because when you pull it out of the pan, it's long. It's actually okra ground up. Honestly, it looks like a big bowl of snot. I'm just going to be honest. That's what it looks like. And when you eat with your fingers when you eat it, so you take a piece of the boule and you break that off and then dip it in that and then your meat. And they would take that and they would like flip it like that and it would just right up on there and you would eat it. I never got quite the hang of that. It was a challenge. Flavor-wise, not too bad. It was fairly mild. The texture would get to me a little bit. This is full of a green leaf that they would harvest and dry in the sun, and so sometimes you get some gritty sand in it, and that bothered me a little bit, but you just, when in Rome, you just eat. This is like, they'd give a little bit if you wanted it. These are equivalent of habaneros on steroids, and they would put just a little bit, which I actually enjoyed, and you would, because the sauce was very mild, and you would just dip a little bit into that and eat it. It was very, very good, actually, on the whole. Another example of a different type of sauce that you would eat. The men, honestly, who were there, they ate better those 2 weeks than they will the rest of the year. So that was really important, including those pastors. This was one Sunday, just an idea of like some food, delicious breads. These are vegetables and kind of a creamy sauce. It was very, very good. I knew this was chicken. I had no idea what this was. And in this case, I was at a church by myself. There was Scott was scheduled to preach at a different church. This was the second Sunday, and I was looking at that. I'm going, oh man, I had no idea. It's dark. I finally pick it up, take a bite, really chewy, and I'm just like, just trying not to think of what part of the animal this could be from. But for them, that's like this is a huge gourmet meal for them, and actually flavor wise, absolutely delicious. So I found out later I needed not to be worried. That was actually duck. So, I wasn't cooked the best. The chicken was amazing. The duck was pretty, felt like halfway to beef jerky. But flavor wise, very, very good. So actually, the food tasting wise, on the whole, was very, very good. Here's another example of some stuff. Again, delicious. I could only eat a little bit of that because of the oils in it. And you can see that even on the picture. I had an opportunity one afternoon when I was not teaching. Carol and Les took me out to the markets just to see a little bit of what life is like when you go shopping in most places. Quite the experience. Very noisy, loud, and hot. This day was probably 95, 97 degrees with no clouds in the sky. If you need cutlery, here you go. Handmade stuff. A lady was selling that. This is a form of the millet that they dry grind, and that's what they make that boule out of. and you'd see ladies grinding this up by hand, and their skin would just be white, just covered with the dust of it as they would do that. Another example. Then this was a different part of the market. Here's where you get some fabrics. These are the places that Christians would not be allowed to own shops in. Very beautiful. Very much more like you would think of Middle Eastern bazaar type of thing. And you have that Arab influence that comes down from the desert down there as well. A neat place to visit and see coffees, spices, teas, all kinds of things that you'd have for sale. There's your meat market. That was an experience to watch, and that's where I got my meat, which I didn't want to think about very much, to be honest. But beautiful dresses for sale. A lady might own one of these, and you will care for that for as long as you possibly can. So this was a big deal for them. The second Sunday that preached in this church, a different part of Sar. Sar is a city of about 300,000 people. They label their churches Baptist Midmissions Church. The Francophone Church is Baptist Midmissions Church number one. This is Baptist Midmissions Church number four. So you say, why would they do that? Well, think about what we have in the States, First Baptist Church or First Presbyterian Church. They just kept the numbering going. And so you would know which order it was started in a particular city. So this is the fourth one that was established. This would have been one of the nicer church buildings that you could be in. Actually had a cement floor, had an opportunity to preach in two services, one in French and one in Sango, Sara. And Gideon was also my translator that day, very helpful. And beautiful people. I show you this picture. This is during the announcement period. Here's Gideon. He is out cold. I literally can hear him snoring. He not only was head of the Christian school, doing theological studies, translating for 2 weeks during this time period, and he has a wife and I think five kids. And translating is exhausting work. It is far more difficult than what Scott or I do. And so there was a lady who took a picture for me. I'll show you her picture in a moment, and I teased him about it later that you're not a very good Baptist. If you're going to do that, you got to be in the back row, not in front of the whole congregation. So, but Annabeth Wivel, she is with Bibles International, had us over for dinner one night. Single lady, like a mind for languages like you would not believe. She can read fluently Biblical Greek, Hebrew, speaks French fluently, Sango, Sara, and several other dialects she's working on as well. And she is really integral in doing translating work. She's the one who took pictures for me that day. And just a gem of a servant for the Lord and doing amazing work. She lives by herself in a village outside of Sara, and visited her home with Scott and two of the other teachers, and she was just a blessing to us in many ways. This is right outside her home, one of the trees there. Give you an idea of some of them. This one was one of the larger ones we saw, and so Scott and I said, we should get a picture by that. Finally, after teaching for a couple of weeks, took a missionary aviation flight back to Jemena. These are co-pilots. One of them was from South Africa. The other one was from France. Doing great work serving churches and gospel ministries there in Chad. Taking off from the airport, and Pastor Christian, Pastor Christian, this was his first time ever in an airplane, and he was thrilled and excited for that, so it was neat. The only thing I wish is I could have been in front of him to see the smile on his face, because you could see from back, he was grinning. It was an amazing experience for him. Taking off, you get a view of the countryside. This is in rainy season. I am told that in the middle of the dry season, most of this will be as brown as you can imagine. So it all dies off. Oop, went the wrong way. Flying through there, you see the flooding. And you also notice how flat the country is. So here's examples you see down there. You see these, not everywhere, but wherever there is roads. These are brick and mud huts, and this is what vast numbers of people live in there. It is like one of the flattest countries on the earth. So during rainy season, it just pools up there and then just eventually sucks down into the ground during their dry season. So very unique territory. That's the jungle. If you want to know what it looks like, that's it. And There are a few roads there, but not much to go on. Flying into the capital city of Jimena, when we flew in on the big plane, it was at night, so I couldn't take any pictures. It's a large city growing and largely unreached for the gospel. So the Christian influence is largely in the south, not the north end of the country. The church plants are working on that. Pastor Christian pastors one of the churches there, and I had opportunity to preach in this church on the Sunday that we flew out to come home. This is a youth choir that was singing, so I was behind them taking a picture of them. The picture is hard to do it justice. This building was a tin roof and open on one side. They packed in about 600 people in here, and then plus about another 100 people sitting in benches on the outside. They're actually working to buy their own property. They currently lease this, and they're hoping to get approval to do that. Back with Laurent, we got a good picture of the inside of his vehicle, and that basically covers up the fact that it's really old. I'll play this for just a moment. This is on the last day of our teaching. Some of the men began to sing, and it was a blessing. We have kind of a ceremony to award those who had finished the PEP program. Get an idea of that there, that they don't run the pentatonic scale the same way that we do. So there were a few songs that I would recognize, that I would hear, but you would sound very different, because more like of an Middle East to Eastern sounds. And so, but beautiful music. Anyways, these are some of the teachers here. You've got Pastor Christian, of course, Scott Gideon, our translator. This is Josue. He was the co-teacher with me working in Genesis. And this is Pastor Waja, one of the older pastors in the area, also pretty well theologically trained. He's getting up there in years and will not be long with us. He came for the day of the awards of those who had finished the pastoral enrichment program, the PEP ministry material. And there were a few that had completed once we were there with them, all 12 courses of that. Another picture of Josue. He's 30 years old, his wife, a couple of kids. He's now head of the Bible Institute there outside of Sar, and working on a master's degree from Cameroonian Seminary in Cameroon. And so he transports himself that way a few times a year to keep working on that degree. Great guy, has a huge amount of potential, and was just a joy to work and be with him. And you say, why in the world would we go there? Just tell you, I've mentioned this in a couple of different ways, but it's important to understand. 100 years ago next month, Baptist Missions brought the gospel for the first time to the heart of Africa. There were many people before 1925 that were working in Africa, but they were primarily on the coasts or the northern end of Africa. Nobody had taken the gospel really into the heart of Africa. And there were a group of Baptist mid-missions missionaries, or Baptist missionaries, who were associated with the General Association of Regular Baptist Churches that said, we need to take the gospel where the gospel is not known. A fellow by the name of William Haas was one of the first guys to do that. He ventured into the heart of Africa. Others soon followed. To do that was essentially a death sentence. They would transport their things often in coffins because they knew that they would not be coming home. The parasites, malaria, all sorts of the challenges of the jungle were severe. But they went, and they started that first church. I showed you the Francophone Baptist Church. Eventually was established there, grew and grew, and they began to teach and train a number of people. In 1973, so they'd been there over almost 50 years, there was a new president that was appointed, that was elected in Chad, and he was very much against the Christians. He was trying to unite the country religiously, and they have pagan tribal initiation rites that are ungodly and sexual in nature, just not good. And he was insisting that all Chadians partake in that. And so he called in 13 of the Baptist leaders, men that were second-generation Christians, most of them that the Baptist missionaries had poured their heart into. These were the people, the leaders of Chad, that were going to take the gospel forward, not with a white missionary, but with nationals. And so he called 13 of the men and demanded that they tell their churches that they would that they should be allowed to participate in the tribal initiation rites. And they refused. They said, it's, you know, classic, we ought to obey God rather than men, and the things you'd be encouraging us to do are not good. And so he had his soldiers march them out to a field. I got a chance to see, drive by where the field was. Couldn't get a picture of it. It's now covered in sugar cane. And they executed all 13 of them there. That was in 1973. That was a really huge setback for the missionaries on a number of levels. Many of them had to flee the country for their own lives. But also the men that they had poured the most in, that were going to be the future teachers and leaders of the country, are now gone. And so by the time you get into the 80s and 90s, more missionaries have come back there. And in some sense, they're kind of starting over. So that's where the, and in the meantime, you've got cultural revolutions and things that happen along the way. But in spite of those great challenges, in 100 years, in Chad alone, there are over 600 Baptist churches that have been started from that one church. An amazing thing that is happening. Pastor Christian, when we were there in the capital city of Jimena, one of the assistant pastors was out preaching in what they call a chapel. They have a model there where they start basically with a glorified Bible study. When they get enough people that they feel like they could have someone come, they'll get somebody to preach there. And when they can actually pay a pastor, they start a church. And they just keep doing this over and over and over again. Central African Republic, to the south of there, Baptist missionaries started that work there. It's very similarly kind of work that is growing. And they say there are over 1,000 Baptist churches there today in that country. They're in great need primarily for what things like Scott and I and others are doing, is to help them train their leaders to be careful students of the word. Most of them, if they are humanly speaking lucky, will have a MacArthur Study Bible as their entire library, especially if they're a village pastor. If they don't have that, maybe they would have a Schofield Reference Bible. So when we come and give them a packet of, like, Scott's notes were 90 pages long in hermeneutics, mine were about 60 pages in Genesis, that is library for them. And it's essential for what they're doing. A few of the city pastors have more opportunities for further training. And so we are encouraging that the most we can. So this is an amazing work. It's not fancy. There's no good reason, humanly speaking, to go back to Chad. It's not a particularly comfortable place. I've had all the adventure I'd want there, to be honest. But you say, why would somebody go back? Because you look at those 65 guys and you go, there's a lot to be had there. They just need training. They need teaching. And they're thirsty for it. They're so thirsty for it. So it's a great blessing. Your partnership is affecting that ministry there. The PEP program has asked me to actually consider rewriting their Genesis notes. They do need to be updated. I did a lot of work on them already. So starting here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be teaching you in Sunday School Genesis, and that's going to help me work towards rewriting their notes in the long run for them. That'll be a year or two project, and so you guys will get to be my guinea pigs on that, and I'm looking forward to that. And so it's a work, but I think it'll be fruitful, not just for Chad, if it's accepted. It's the kind of thing that would be used literally by thousands of pastors in third world countries. And so not doing that because you're looking to get famous, you don't do that. You don't make any money doing that, but just an opportunity to help brothers and churches who are in need. All right, I've talked a lot. Man, I'm out of time. Any quick questions?
How far did some of these guys come in from? They had motorcycles in the rainy season. I mean, was it nationwide or just your little section?
Yeah, so the question is, if you didn't hear, how far did these guys come from? Most of them came from the southern end of the country. They would be in regions, catch a bus ride like us to the capital city, or if they were closer by motorbikes. Some of them literally, in order to get to a road, they would take canoes and canoe down rivers to catch a ride to get to the bus station to get there. PEP Ministry actually helps fund some of that. So the PEP Ministry actually helps fund at least part of the food and the transportation costs you know, these guys are, I mean, they have nothing. So this is a huge, huge sacrifice for them. Most of those pastors are working full-time in some sort of farming in order to survive with a little bit of gifts from their churches. And so it's very difficult for them. But yeah, they most on the southern end of the country.
Chad was originally a French colony, is that?
That's correct.
Is there any Catholic influence there at all?
Yeah, actually close by to the church, there's Catholic schools there. In the north, there's a few more. But that you see them, but I would say it's not as strong there anymore. The Protestants have, and Muslims are dominant now. But there are definitely Catholic influences there.
Do they work at all with KABU, Central African Baptist University?
No, because that's in Zambia, right? I think that's the one.
They just said Central Africa, and when I saw that, I'm like, I wonder how close that was.
Yeah, the big problem there is Zambia speaks English.
Okay.
And so I know that. I'm actually currently in that I'm working on a THM. One of my fellow classmates is from there. He's the dean of the seminary. I think you were are we talking the same one? I think so. Phil Hunt is the director. Yes. Okay. So Ken Banda is his name, and he's just another just great godly man. He's working at THM from Central right now, so he better equipped to train. Actually, where they go is Cameroon. There's a seminary there. Some of you might have remembered Brian McPhail Fossey works at that seminary. He came, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago here, something like that. Brian is there, and some of these guys, if they can get some funding, go there to get some classes. Also, currently, some of the Cameroonian teachers travel down to SAR to teach in their theological school as well. But that's very expensive, difficult. But the big reason is Cameroon speaks French. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I speak a little SAR, but sometimes when my wife speaks, I still don't understand what she's saying.
There you go. Yeah, so that was a challenge. Like when I was in Turkey, there's a lot of people that spoke pretty good English. In Chad, there's a lot of the younger people speak a little English. But the older people do not. So they are actively teaching in a number of schools English there. And that, but it's mostly, they see that as a ticket to get out of the country. That's why. Because not just the United States, but think Canada, Australia, Great Britain, South Africa, all those places are hopeful places where they could go do business, potentially either leave or generate income for their families back home.
Did you hear or see anything of the remnants of Margie?
Yes. So Margie was a missionary that we met at Missionary Acres. She has written a Sunday school curriculum. She was in Chad. She would have been in Bulimba where Annabeth Wivel was at. And I'm told that her Sunday school curriculum is still by and large used in most of those 600 churches to this day. So some of you who a few years ago went to Missionary Acres know who I'm talking about on there. They did say, though, that it needs to be updated, so there's hope to do that, but it's still in use today, so her ministry is still going forward. I better stop here because we got 10 minutes before the morning service. Thank you so much. I'd be happy to answer more questions afterwards. Feel free to take a look at the trinkets over here, some things we brought back, some carvings and things, and we'll see you in the morning service.